Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Last week, tech billionaire Elon Musk said he has verbal government approval to build a Hyperloop, a high-speed, high-tech transport capsule that travels in low-pressure underground tubes. It could take passengers, he said, from New York to Washington, D.C. in 29 minutes, revolutionize how we get around, or, as some critics say, change the way the wealthy travel or never get built at all. The government hasn't given an all clear yet, but the technology is advancing. This hour, On Point, Elon Musk and Hyperloop Hype. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Are you ready to take an underground ride in a nearly vacuum-sealed tube? Do you see Hyperloop travel in your future? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Elon Musk, he of SpaceX, yes, he puts stuff in space. And Tesla, he's put a lot of cars on the road, has been thinking and talking about the Hyperloop for a while now. Here's back in 2013. He's talking with Kara Swisher at the All Things Digital Conference in San Francisco. Before details of the Hyperloop were well known, here he is vaguely describing the conference.
Is it a train? A plane?
No.
An automobile?
Transporter
machine?
It's a cross between a Concorde, a railgun, and an air hockey table.
Okay, not the conference. The concept, I should have said. It'd be a cross between a Concorde, the supersonic plane that's no longer flying, a railgun, oh, those can blast things in her, and an air hockey table, that we can relate to. Here he was in 2015 in talking with CNN Money, describing how simple to his mind the Hyperloop concept is.
It's like a tube with an air hockey table. It's just a low-pressure tube with a pod in it that runs on air bearings, on air skis, with an air compressor on the front that's taking the high-pressure air buildup on the nose and pumping it through the air skis. It's really, I swear, it's not that hard.
Got that? Don't worry. We're going to go through the engineering on this very carefully and think about how it works and what it might mean. There was a time when they were talking about doing a tube that would whisk you coast to coast in under an hour, 40-something minutes. Well, it's a little more modest now, but L.A. to San Francisco, 30 minutes. New York to Washington, D.C. is the hour. These things can be very fast. Here he was in a TED Talk in April. This is Elon Musk talking with Chris Anderson, the British entrepreneur behind the TED Talks, and Musk sharing his thoughts on the future of the Hyperloop.
I mean, like, so cautiously optimistic we'll be able to be faster than the world's fastest bullet train, even in a 0.8-mile stretch.
Whoa. Good brakes.
It's either going to smash into tiny pieces or go quite fast.
Ooh, we want to know the difference. Smash into tiny pieces or go quite fast. If you're curious about what the Hyperloop looks like, we have many photos of designs at our website, onpointradio.org. I want to go first today to San Francisco and Tim Higgins, reporter for the Wall Street Journal, covering tech and autos and, Hyperloop. You can read his latest piece on Elon Musk at our website, onpointradio.org. Tim Higgins, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
So this has been on Elon's mind for a while. It seems like very often when he's stuck in traffic in L.A., he's thinking about moving very rapidly underground. What is a Hyperloop, Tim?
Well, it's essentially miles and miles long, a tube that you would just shoot across the country, if you will. He says that essentially it's very practical in a distance that's less than 900 miles. Anything longer than that, he says we should look at supersonic flight. And so he looks at places like L.A. and San Francisco and says, hey, this is a perfect way to go really fast in a tube.
So he actually has a company now called Boring Company, as in B-O-R-I-N-G, like bore tunnels underground. You put a tube in there, then you, create a vacuum or a near vacuum? It reminds me of the old, very old tubes they used to have in department stores that would take receipts and bills and calls for purchases around the building. Is that the essential idea? You lower the air pressure in there?
Yeah, essentially, that's what we're talking about. You know, it's a little bit more complicated than that, of course. It being Elon, it's cutting edge, but that's essentially what we're talking about. A sealed tube that would go from one point to another point, and he's talking about it from D.C. to New York in 29 minutes. That's way faster than Amtrak's fastest train, the Acela line, which is, you know, takes a little bit less than 3 hours.
What's the state of development on this? Who's testing it? Who's building early versions? Is Musk himself? Others?
Yeah, well, there's never been a fully proven concept out there. There are some startups that are getting funding and kind of racing to see if they can create one. There's a company called Hyperloop One that has received some money and but run into delays and that sort of thing. It's theoretically, people say it's possible, but there's not one in service right now that you can go try out if you'd like.
Hyperloop One, Musk came out with this as kind of open source concept. They jumped in on it this month. They had a real-world test of the technology. Here's a little sound of that. Hyperloop One testing its early version, I guess, of Hyperloop.
3, 2, 1, fire.
And Hyperloop One ready to brag on that experiment right there. Here was... this was Shervin Peshawar, one of the founders there, co-founders, talking about what it was like to see the project through.
Hyperloop is real. The video you saw is our Kitty Hawk moment. We take a lot of inspiration from the Wright brothers and wanted to show the world that it works. And this is the first full-scale Hyperloop in the world.
Tim Higgins with The Wall Street Journal. Are people taking this seriously? I mean, Elon Musk talked about going into space, and he's done that. Talked about a fancy electric car. Tesla, he's done that. Huge solar developments. Is Hyperloop getting the same degree of serious reception?
Well, I think the tweets that he put out saying that he'd received some government verbal approval was initially kind of greeted with huge skepticism, just A, because massive public projects aren't really announced that way, and they have a process they have to go through getting approval at all various levels of government. So, you know, great skepticism up front, but also great curiosity. One of the things I think that people like about Elon Musk is that he says these things that just do not seem believable at all. It just seems like pure fantasy. And then, you know, kind of gets towards some of that. You look what he's done with SpaceX, you look at what he's done with Tesla, and he really ignites the kind of imagination of the masses.
Tim, stand by there in San Francisco. Ariane Marshall joins us as well right now from San Francisco, transportation writer at Wired magazine. Ariane, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Glad to be here.
Elon Musk says he has verbal government approval for Hyperloop. You write, well, Elon, that's verbal government approval is not a thing. It's just not a thing. What do you make of Musk's Twitter burst last week that this is getting going?
I'd say it's a bit unrealistic knowing what we do about the way big infrastructure projects work in this country. Verbal government approval, as Tim noted, kind of sent Twitter into a tailspin. What does that mean? We're still not quite sure what it means. But when I contacted the Department of Transportation, they pointed me toward the White House. A spokesperson there said they had had promising conversations with Musk and the Boring Company. That's exciting for him. Having the president on his side is a great sign, but they're not close to breaking the ground. There's a lot of steps to be taken before that can happen.
But they are boring. I mean, the Boring Company is tunneling somewhere, something, Ariane?
They are boring. They're boring on Musk's SpaceX, his company in Los Angeles. They're boring on their ground there. He does not need approval from L.A. or any of the counties involved because it's his land. So he kind of gets to sidestep all the regulations there, which is exciting for him. And he gets to kind of test out his technology, which it sounds like he's still doing a lot of perfecting there. He says he's going to reduce the costs of tunnel boring, which is a really expensive process, by at least a factor of 10. That would be awesome if he can do it, but we haven't actually seen that happen yet.
And of course, to actually do this, you'd need permission from an awful lot of, I guess, property owners, Ariane, to tunnel under their property and cities to tunnel through the maze of city facilities?
Yeah, absolutely. This would be the longest tunnel, not only in the United States, but in the world.
You're talking New York to Washington or L.A. to Frisco?
Yeah, New York. Sorry, we're talking New York to Washington now, which he says he has verbal government approval for. It would go through at least six states and at least four major cities under at least three rivers. There are a lot of local governments that would need to get involved. And when we talked to a bunch of cities that this proposed Hyperloop would pass through last week, a lot of the city halls were really caught off guard. They had no idea what we were talking about. So clearly those conversations haven't really started yet.
Tim, what does this look like? I mean, do you get into something like a train car or do you climb into your own private pod? Or what does the Hyperloop capsule look like conceptually?
Well, yeah, that's the open to the imagination at this point. We've seen a lot of different kind of drawings and sketches out there. But, you know, the idea would be you get in a pod and you go on your way. One of the other things that Elon has been talking about is creating a network of tunnels beneath cities to essentially allow cars to travel on pods around town to avoid traffic, which isn't the Hyperloop, but is in the same kind of genre of tunnel traffic and part of his bigger vision of kind of recreating transportation in the U.S., and it comes at a time when the Trump administration is talking about having huge, big, bold infrastructure spending projects. So it's coming at the right time for that kind of conversation.
Of course, a lot of that conversation has been focused on highways, but a lot of thinkers are saying, Tim, with where we're headed, it's more likely to be above or below ground. The surface is getting crowded.
You drive around any major city in the U.S. and there's lots of congestion. So congestion is a problem. Some thinkers would like the idea that autonomous vehicles could help solve some of that. But, a big part of the solution is going to be public transportation.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS consumeraccess.org, number 3030.
Hi, it's Tom. Before we get back to the show, I wanted to tell you to be sure and stay with us till the very end of this podcast for a preview of Freak Out and Carry On. It's WBUR's new podcast that addresses today's politics through a historical lens. Give it a listen, and thanks.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about a new vision of warp speed travel around this country in tunnels, sealed tubes underground between cities in minutes. It's called Hyperloop. Elon Musk of Tesla and SpaceX fame is pushing it, talking it up. We're asking this hour, could it happen? Ariane Marshall is with us from Wired Magazine. Tim Higgins from The Wall Street Journal. You can join us as well. Do you know Hyperloop? Hyperspeed, underground, in a vacuum, New York to D.C. in 29 minutes, L.A. to San Francisco in 30. Does that sound plausible to you? Too good to be true? Would you take the ride? And if Elon Musk is pushing it, are you prepared to believe from the guy who brought us SpaceX and Tesla engineers? What do you think? Could it? Should it work? Elon Musk tweeting last week, he's got verbal government approval for this. Ariane Marshall reminds us that's not a thing. There are a lot of local governments that would be involved here, but people are definitely thinking about it. This is Michael Rodnitsianu, recently retired president of the Metropolitan Transportation Authority Capital Construction Company, oversees large-scale transportation infrastructure projects in New York City. He and CNBC analyst James Pethakoukas talked on CNBC earlier this month about the barriers to building a hyperloop, the tunnels between New York and D.C.
The other part that is very cumbersome and complicated is the needed approvals to go these 230 to 250 miles to connect the two cities. And that's going to be a very cumbersome.
That may be more challenging than the technology itself. Because anybody says no between here and D.C. and there, they have a problem.
But Musk doesn't give up easily. He was talking earlier this year about why people shouldn't be too concerned about Hyperloop tunnels that might be built beneath their business or home. Here was Musk at a TED Talk in April.
If you go deep enough, you cannot detect the tunnel. This is sometimes people think, well, it's going to be pretty annoying to have a tunnel dug under my house. Like if that tunnel is dug more than about 3 or 4 tunnel diameters beneath your house, you will not be able to detect it being dug at all.
3 or 4 tunnel diameters beneath your house. We're talking about a diameter of, 9 to 12 meters. We'll check on what that would mean for total depth. Callers for you, Arian and Tim. Terry in Brewstertown, Tennessee. Terry, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Thank you, Tom. Yes, the concept of the Hyperloop has been around for a long time. The vacuum-operated teller machines at the drive-thru.
Sure. Put your money or your receipt. They'll send it to you and zip it right out to you.
And Elon Musk has provided so many things that I wouldn't bet against him. And the Hyperloop doesn't have to be underground.
Just start laying pipeline and go whisking through it above ground, Terry?
Why not?
We'll ask the engineers. I appreciate your call. Let me get one more right here from Wachula, Florida. Andrew, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I emphasize what was just picked up as far as the maturity of the technology, not just plastic tubes at banks and department stores, but the practicability of this technology is actually quite mature. It's been around for a long time. You dig into it a little bit historically, and you'll see that a lot of practical work and a great deal of theoretical work has been done. And today, we've got better materials, better technology to achieve these things. It's not just a question of don't bet against Elon. You know, actually, don't bet against the track record of this thing. And you're looking at something that hasn't come up yet here, which is safety issues.
Safety. Okay.
When your engines fail in flight in an aircraft, what happens?
Not good things. You come down.
Right. Okay. When you are at or below ground level, moving at very high speed in a tunnel, which is a very highly physically controlled environment, I'm not saying that you won't have problems. You're going to run trains. You're going to have wrecks. Okay. But as far as overall safety is concerned, and cost efficiency, you don't have to build runways for this thing. You don't have to build enormous facilities for it. So when people start actually looking at the numbers, looking at the cost, looking at the desirability, the savings of time, the savings of energy consumption, because holding a heavier than aircraft in the air at high speed is something that consumes a lot of energy and requires a lot of combustion. Let's remember that we can run these things on electricity. And especially if we, you know, move in the direction of maglev, which is one of the things that's always been seen as desirable in this environment. We don't have the room temperature superconducting magnets yet to do it, but we're certainly working in that direction. I'm sure that Elon Musk is aware of that. He's using aerodynamics right now, but one more step in the technology will put us even further down that road. It's a desirable technology. It's been seen as a desirable technology for decades. And now he's saying, let's do it.
Andrew, it sounds like you're ready to get on board. I want to know a little bit more about it before I climb down in that tube, but we hear your enthusiasm. Maglev, magnetic levitation. Arian Marshall, Tim Higgins, I want to come to you guys and talk about cost in a minute here, but let's learn more about how this might actually work first, if we may. Christian Claudel joins us from Austin, Texas, professor at the Cockrell School of Engineering at the University of Texas at Austin. Specializes in transportation engineering. Christian Claudel, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks. Hi, Tom.
Can you take us through your version? What's the basic concept? How's Hyperloop work?
So the Hyperloop is essentially an improvement over high-speed trains. High-speed trains have been demonstrated since decades. So, for example, you have the example of the French TGV or the Japanese Shinkansen that go at very
train.
High speeds.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Exactly, the bullet trains. So they can reach speeds around 600 kilometers per hour. Which is already extremely fast. And Elon Musk wants to essentially improve the speed over these existing systems.
How?
And so one of the issues is actually that for these very high-speed trains, the main force that holds the train back is the drag caused by the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, when you go at very low altitude, you have enormous drag, especially at these very high speeds. And actually, the high speed that you reach of 600 kilometers per hour is not much less than what you would reach in an airplane.
But the drag at ground level, just the air resistance from the air, is thick.
Is extremely high, exactly. Mm-hmm. So, for example, at low altitude, an Airbus will fly, or a Boeing will fly at 600 kilometers per hour, too. That's why they have to go at high altitude to reduce the drag.
Okay.
And the idea behind the Hyperloop is actually to reduce the drag on the train setting. So the only way for you to do this is to have a tube in which you lower the pressure. The pressure is actually quite low. It's not a perfect vacuum, but it's corresponding to an altitude above 20 kilometers. The idea also of the Hyperloop is also to reach very high subsonic speeds, so you won't exceed the speed of sounds because there are physical limitations.
Okay.
But the main idea of Elon Musk was to add a compressor in front of the capsule, and this compressor is actually pumping air from the front and pushing it to the back, creating some thrust and reducing the onset of this wave drag that would be like a sound barrier in which the energy efficiency of the system would drop.
What kind of speed in miles per hour for American listeners, yep, Christian?
So you're limited by the speed of sound in all cases, but in the white paper that Elon Musk showed in 2013, I believe the speeds were in the order of 1,200 kilometers per hour, which is about 700 mph.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, 700 that's fast. Miles per hour. So you've got a very low pressure tube, so that cuts down on the drag. What's propelling this, and what's it sit? Are there rails, or is it floating maglev style? Yeah. What?
So that's a very important question. How do you manage to lift all this mass? And at very high speeds, obviously, the conventional wheels don't work. So you have essentially two technologies. The first technology is magnetic levitation, or maglev. So we have heard about this before. Magnetic levitation works essentially by the interaction of magnetic fields. So you have probably experienced that when you put two magnets together, and if they have the same pole facing each other, for example, the north or south poles, they are repelling each other. So that's a very crude form of repulsion that you can use to lift something. In the Hyperloop, the idea is slightly more complicated because you don't have magnets on the track to reduce the cost. Some magnetic levitation trains have magnets on the tracks, like the German Transrapid, for example. But on the Hyperloop concept that I have seen, the tracks do not contain any magnets. So essentially, you have magnets on the pods, and these magnets are inducing currents in the track itself. And these currents, in return, are creating a magnetic field. And if you carefully design the track and at high speed, you will generate enough current actually to sustain and to lift the system.
And does it look practical? I mean, he wants to put it underground. Why not just lay a tube above ground?
I think there have been some concepts in which the tubes are above ground. Some of the concerns were terrorism, because you would have the facility that is more exposed. And we haven't talked about safety at this stage, but a depressurization or a pressurization of the system could have catastrophic consequences. So that's something that we might want to avoid.
Yeah, and there we are. It sounds like something that could work if you could get permissions to go under all these places. Christian Claudel, please stand by. William in Yorktown, Virginia. William, you're on.
Hello. I'd like to point out that there was a working version of this constructed under the streets of New York City in 1870.
Get out.
It was called the Beach Pneumatic Transit. It ran about a block underneath Broadway.
Yeah.
The chief engineer was Alfred Ely Beach. It ran for about a year. It was more of an amusement park ride than a useful transit. But this idea is 147 years old.
William, I love that. The idea that in 1870, a little taste of Hyperloop, and I appreciate your reminding us. Andy in New Haven, Connecticut. Andy, you're on.
Hi, Tom. How's it going?
Okay.
I'm a master mechanic and a transportation engineer, I guess you could say, and I would like to say that, you know, there's a small portion of this country trying to 3D print all of this into reality, and another portion that's mining coal and stripping emissions regulations. So this is a real hard sell for a lot of people, and I think that that's going to be what eventually holds this up, because technology isn't.
What's the hard sell, Andy? Why would, I mean, if it, Elon Musk says, hey, the tunnel is going to be so deep you won't even see it and you'll travel fast, what's the hard sell?
I think people will just be opposed to anything that's not, you know, of the regular, and people want more bridges and stuff like that, and I just think that that's just not the answer anymore, and Elon Musk recognizes that, and a lot of other people do as well.
Andy, I appreciate your call as well. I mean, you can't blame people for wanting better bridges and roads when they see them falling to pieces. Ariane Marshall, what about the California version of this? Is there popular support? I don't know. Does Jerry Brown want a Hyperloop from San Francisco to L.A.?
There hasn't been a ton of movement on the San Francisco to L.A. route, though it was the one that Musk originally proposed in his big white paper on Hyperloop. That's a 350-mile route between L.A. and San Francisco. The other problem in California is that it's kind of in direct competition with California's high-speed rail, which has been in the works for decades now and has hit a few roadblocks. One of them is funding. Another one is land acquisition. So there hasn't been a ton of movement on the West Coast. But we'll see. You know, as we say, Musk is an ambitious guy, so we'll see what happens.
What about safety issues? Think about California. You think about earthquakes. I don't know if I want to be in an underground tube in an earthquake, or I don't, maybe anywhere else, but what about the safety of these buried tubes, Ariane?
Based on everything I've heard from engineers, and we know that Los Angeles and San Francisco both already have subways that run underground, at least partially. Once the further you get kind of under the ground, the less disruptive earthquakes are to the train. So I don't think fault lines are the big issue here. I think there are a lot of kind of regulatory issues that would probably come up before that.
Tim, what about cost for New York to Washington, D.C.? That's a lot of tunnel to bore. If you can get permission, is it economical?
Well, that's the billion-dollar question, right?
I mean, several billion. Huh?
Elon hasn't talked about what the cost might be between New York and D.C., but when he was talking about his idea for California a few years ago, he was making the point that the pods that you would travel in would be much cheaper than the tube, and so the pods would maybe be several hundred millions of dollars at most, and that the tubes would be several billion dollars, and that all of that would be cheaper than the several tens of billions of dollars proposed for a high-speed trail line down California. And when he was talking about it in 2013, he said part of the advantage was he was talking about having the Hyperloop be above ground at that point and essentially running the length of California's Highway 5. So he was essentially saying you could take advantage of that land, and unlike a train system that would need a wide swath of land for it, he wouldn't.
How would those costs convert into price for a ticket? Is this going to be like flying in the Concorde, the realm of the rich, or something else, Tim?
Well, he definitely wants it to be, a practical use of transportation. And if you look at his tweets in the recent days, he's also talked about how he could see advantage of taking the Hyperloop from L.A. to San Francisco and then on towards Reno, where he has a giant battery factory, and he could see that being useful for moving, the freight that he needs to transport between his factory in Fremont, where he's building the Model S and the Model X and the Model 3 cars.
Tesla.
And the battery factory he has. So he sees it as a potential for moving moving goods as well as people.
Knitting a whole new vision together here. Maybe. Big maybes. Mike in New Orleans. Thank you for calling, Mike. You're on the air.
Yes, Tom. I was a senior engineer with the Martin Marietta manned space systems about 30 years ago.
Okay, we're listening.
And what's interesting here is we're also tilting at the future. If you look, we've built roads and we've covered the earth with asphalt.
Mm-hmm.
But the newer technologies are really what we need to develop, and it's going to be developing materials, things like graphene, diamagnetic materials to make all these things happen. We also need to start producing the engineers. We need a generation to start thinking out of the box. And Elon Musk is really pushing the envelope, because if we go to the moon or Mars, we're not going to build conventional highways, you know, burning diesel, and the infrastructure is going to be completely different. So I think we're doing double duty. It's good to start looking at this. There's a whole lot of good things that can come out, you know, of developing this technology. And if we really want to get the country back on a good track, let's start getting the next generation thinking about how to do it.
Mike, I like your spirit. I like it a lot. I really appreciate your call from New Orleans. Christian Claudel, you're working, thinking about this as an engineer. Does this look like something to you that could become reality within, I mean, Musk has put some pretty short time frames on this, but within a decade, 2 decades, Christian?
Yeah, I think that this can certainly become a reality. Modular improvements, of course, in the cost and scalability of building things. So obviously, the first test track will probably cost a lot more than what is currently estimated. But as the technology ramps up and as new technology is created, I guess that we can really achieve this target of having Hyperloops working within a decade or so.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about a new vision of warp speed travel around this country in tunnels, underground, between cities, in minutes. It's called Hyperloop. Elon Musk is pushing it, talking it up. They're the founder of SpaceX, Tesla, and more. We're asking, could it happen? With Ariane Marshall of Wired Magazine, Tim Higgins, reporter with the Wall Street Journal. They're both with us from San Francisco. Christian Claudel is here from the University of Texas at Austin Cockrell School of Engineering. He's all over Hyperloop these days. You can join us as well. What do you think? Does this sound good to you? Would the expense be worth it? Would this just be a quick ride for millionaires? Would this tie the country together or cut out every city and town that's not on the loop? Do you think it could work? Wow. We're going to go in just a moment to Virginia Tech, see what they're up to. We've got lots of callers for all three of you. Tim, Ari, and Christian. Felix is calling from Miami. Felix, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, yes. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to address some concerns I heard about building a tube over land, but to build a tube over land, you have to deal with thermal expansion, and a tube that long isn't flexible enough where it would maintain a vacuum.
So what you mean warming and cooling would be an issue above ground? True. And so what's your concern there, Felix?
Well, it can't expand that much. It just won't happen. And so it will either break, and if it does break, then any air that gets into the tube would rush in and destroy anyone who's inside it. It would be like a wall of air smashing into any passenger that happens to be inside the tube at the time.
Christian, is that the risk? We did hear Elon Musk saying earlier that it would either go really fast or break into a lot of pieces. Is that what happens if the vacuum breaks?
I mean, we don't have experimental data to completely back claims, but yes, I think that loss of pressure would be a catastrophic event for sure, given the magnitude of the vacuum that exists in the tube. So you would have a shockwave that would be created. Now, whether the consequences would be completely dramatic for the occupants is not completely known, but that would definitely be a major catastrophe.
Arian, that sounds like a bit of a bummer. What about winning public confidence in this kind of transportation?
Well, it seems like Musk's tweets last week were part of his bid to win public confidence in this. He followed up his first initial tweet about verbal government approval mm-hmm. with the observation that he said he'd love to have people kind of chime in to their lawmakers, local policymakers, and talk about how they really want this thing. And clearly, there's a lot of enthusiasm just based on your callers today, even among people with technical backgrounds. There are problems with regulation in that we don't know exactly what safety bodies would oversee this kind of thing. Is it a train? Would it be overseen by the people who deal with highway regulations? How do you hold Musk and whatever company is building the Hyperloop accountable for safety? These are all up in the air. As Christian points out, we don't quite have data on all this stuff. So I think we're kind of at a wait-and-see point in terms of the safety questions.
I get a range of responses online. Michael says, who but a businessman would want to travel across country in a windowless subway? Okay, fair enough. On the other hand, if you could do it in 40 minutes, you might just be tempted. Another listener says, roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads. And what about this one, writes, instead of mining coal, we have coal mines dig a tunnel for the Hyperloop. Well, Mary in Milwaukee. Thank you for calling, Mary. You're on the air.
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
I was really thinking this would be a really cool idea until I heard about the tunneling idea, which I think would be an environmental disaster. Would mess with aquifers, fault lines. What happens if they hit some kind of a lava tunnel? I just think if they're going to do this, do it above ground. Otherwise, it's just not worth giving up the environment to make ourselves get somewhere faster.
Mary, let's pick it up. Christian, what about it? I mean, Mary makes it sound like a jungle down there. Aquifers and lava tunnels and fault lines. Is underground a menacing environment?
I think we can still get good data on the state of the underground for boring. I'm not an expert in boring per se, but we have considerable experience in boring tunnels. Not that large, however, so of course that would be a first, because as one was mentioned before, a tunnel of a few hundred miles long would be really something that has never even been attempted before. Now, of course, I mean, there is... I think the Hyperloop, is, as was said before, again, is pushing the envelope in all directions. There would be probably a need to do some environmental studies, etc., to validate the concept. But I feel that the boring tunnels is the only solution at this point, again, for also these thermal expansion issues.
Let's go to somebody who's working on this right now. Andrei Gubanov joins us from Philadelphia. He's the team lead for the Virginia Tech Hyperloop team. There's a competition out there that SpaceX has put on, and they are in. They're going to be competing again in Hawthorne, California in August. He's a junior at Virginia Tech, a computer engineering major. You can see photos of his team's design at our website, onpointradio.org. Andrei Gubanov, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
What's your approach to Hyperloop? What's your team's approach?
Honestly, our main criteria is that everything is modular and as simple as possible, because with an idea like this, there's so much new untested technology that complicating will just cause problems. So for our team, the end goal is to test as much as we can and work out a design that is hopefully going to simplify some of the more complex ideas.
Are you looking at a design for the tunnel or simply for the pod, the capsule, Dave?
The pod.
Andrei. Just the pod. So what's your pod look like? How many people would fit in it? Is it 1, 10, 50? I don't know.
So for our pod, for the entire competition, we're building just under half-scale pods, which, and our criteria is we be able to fit a single human-sized test dummy into it. So in our case, we're fitting one person.
So my trip's going to be short, but it'll be lonely.
Well, in a full idea, that would probably be a group of 10 people. But for our testing, for our competition, yes, it would be pretty lonely.
And do I get to, you know, as you envision this, do I sit as if in a train seat or an airplane seat? Or do I have to, I don't know, stretch out like I'm in a hot dog?
I mean, no. In our pod, it's a normal full-person seat. You sit down, legs stretched out, and you're not really held back by anything. I mean, you're going to be covered. There's no windows, as others have said, but yeah.
And off it goes. Speed? What kind of speed do you think your pod could take?
So we're actually, for our second competition, we're designing right now for a speed of about 140 miles an hour, looking up to 160 max. And on our half scale, we're pretty confident that we're going to be the fastest there.
That's not so fast. I thought we were going to be 600 or 700 miles per hour.
Well, we're also dealing with a test track that is just under a mile in length. So even if we wanted to go faster, we would run out of track way before we could ever achieve any speed.
Okay. You're working on it, and we like that. We've got callers for you as well, Andrei. David in Boca Raton, Florida. David, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Real quickly, one of the things that I was thinking about while I was listening to all the callers is it's wonderful to have programs where you actually still have diversity of opinion. There aren't many of them left.
I love that, David. I love it very much. So do you have a diverse opinion for us?
Oh, I'm in the, I think this is a much bigger thing as it relates to me, and it comes both from the financial side and the political side, which is,
yeah,
any kid that can read Jules Verne or H.G. Wells, like Elon Musk, can come up with all kinds of wild and crazy futuristic ideas, that are appealing and attractive. I would much rather that we get tacit approval from the government to actually improve things for the greater common good, like roads, bridges, and infrastructure, and that we get away from the cult of personality of indulging the ideas of an Elon Musk, who, with all due respect, which is a phrase I hate, but has never made money for anybody at anything. Every business he has ever started has lost money, including PayPal. So why is the government going to continue to fund somebody like him with wild and fancy ideas, which will change and evolve, and he will come up with something else to move it down the road in the next 15 minutes. And we fund it, we give him energy credits, and it all goes basically into one spot as opposed to helping people.
Hey, David, we've got your diverse opinion, and we will go straight to it. Ariane Marshall, is that Elon Musk's reputation in your circles? I mean, you know, we say his name, we think about SpaceX, and we know they go up there. We think about Tesla. We know there are a lot of them out there. Solar, he's put a lot of it out there. But what about David's complaint? Look, this is ultimately kind of wild and fanciful. It doesn't make money. It's not economical. He's good at spinning us into an excited fantasy.
I would say, as a lot of people have pointed out already, never bet against Elon Musk. He's done some really impressive and kind of insane things over his career. That said, when I do talk to transportation scholars, people who have been involved in infrastructure policy circles for years and years and years, they are a little wary of this idea. They point out, hey, we have billions and billions of dollars of just infrastructure maintenance that this country needs desperately. I live in San Francisco. Potholes here are crazy. They give you a headache. It'd be great to get those solved. That might be kind of an easier lift than figuring out how to build this entire new piece of infrastructure under the ground.
And yet people do take him seriously. The possibility, reading an essay on Medium here, saying they fear that if you had Hyperloop and it was expensive to move on it, but let's say New York to Washington, then suddenly Philly and Baltimore are real easy commutes to New York or Washington, and you're going to have gentrification like crazy. They're saying it's going to just create a society in which it's just this linked cities that go underground. They don't even see what else is out there. Only the rich sort of thrive in this. Reading from this essay, they say, for those enjoying low cost of living in Philly and Baltimore, life will change rapidly. People who thought they were gentrifiers will be double gentrified out of their neighborhoods they were gentrifying once Hyperloop comes in. Cheeseburgers will cost $23. Local bodegas will be replaced by national chains. Everybody will be Yankees fans. It's just going to be one network of rich city traffic. Do you worry about that, Ariane?
Yeah, I think there are a lot of things that we need to think through as a country that would change if we kind of spatially connected things in this way. It'd be like the construction of the suburbs after the war, what happened when the car came into America. That had some great implications for a lot of people. They could have backyards, they could have more space. But for some people who were left in the cities, there were a lot of really horrible things that happened. Their schools were defunded. Their infrastructure was defunded. I think there can be also a lot of good as well. What does it mean for the economy if we connect things more comprehensively, if we can move freight faster? So I think there are probably a lot of good stuff, a lot of bad stuff. I think we're just starting to think about what this technology would mean for space and for that space, land space in America, and just for the country overall.
Our caller David in Boca Raton is a little tired of Elon Musk, but imaginations never get tired of imagining, and we do definitely have congestion out there on the surface. Michael in Miami. Mike, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hello, Tom. My experience has been in the airline industry, and specifically the airports are congested, over-congested now, and we need to find an alternative for these short-haul travel, quick short-haul travel, that can relieve some of the congestion at airports. A small commuter flight taking off takes just as much resources and runway space and time as the long-haul flights that leave down a runway with 500, you know, with 200 people on it versus a small commuter flight with 80 people on it. Same amount of time for both, and it's the same amount of congestion.
Yeah.
If we can move these people out of airports and give them an alternative, that we can use our airports more effectively for long-haul travel.
Out of the sky, underground on the Hyperloop. Michael, I appreciate your call from Miami. Christian, can you see Hyperloop competing with the volume or even significantly diminishing the volume of air traffic that we have in this country already, and that congestion, I mean, can you build enough tunnels, Hyperloop tunnels, to really take some pressure off, let's say, the skies, or for that matter, the highways?
That's a very important question, because the economics of the Hyperloop right now is not very clear. Of course, the stated price of Elon Musk in his white paper, that would definitely be a strong competitor with air traffic. However, I think we need to wait until the first few Hyperloop tubes are implemented to start to worry about economics and whether it will impact air transportation. I think at this point, air transportation is very practical. The advantage of air transportation is also that you can switch between airports as demand shifts, for example, when cities are growing or shrinking, which is something that you don't have access to. You have enormous capital costs when building an Hyperloop, so you need to really be completely confident on the use of the of this tube and the economics over the lifetime.
Andre, you're a junior in college at Virginia Tech. Is this just an interesting project for you, or do you feel persuaded that in your lifetime this will be a big deal?
I mean, both. It's an amazing project to work on, for one, because a lot of the answers to the questions that we have can't just be looked up. We have an entire group of students on our team that are dedicated to just testing new ideas and materials, trying to figure out what could work for our pod. But looking beyond, I like anything, there's a lot of development to be done, both regulatory and in the actual technology. But I don't think it's as far-fetched as many would be inclined to believe.
Can you get into your own pod? Have you ridden in it? Is it big enough, Andre?
Yeah, actually, there was a... funny enough, I haven't ridden in it because putting it in the tube, they won't have anyone in the pod during the competition. But I have sat in it, and I mean, for one person, it's spacious. I mean, dark, but spacious.
I don't know if that's going to be a good marketing campaign. Dark, but spacious. Your next trip from New York to Washington, D.C. Wow, this has really been interesting. Elon Musk puts challenging ideas out there. You have people cheering, and I see a lot of them in our social media responding here online. Others saying, wait a darn minute. But it's a lot to think about, and I'm really grateful to all of you for helping us do it. Tim Higgins at the Wall Street Journal, who kicked us off, thank you very much for joining us from San Francisco.
Thank you.
Arian Marshall, who's written this all up for Wired.com, her headline, "Oh, Elon, building infrastructure for the Hyperloop doesn't work like that," at Wired.com. Arian, you're terrific. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks so much. Glad to be here.
At Virginia Tech, we've got junior Andre Gupinoff, who's on the team there. Good luck in the competition, Andre.
Thank you.
And Christian Claudel, University of Texas at Austin, for all your insights. Thanks very much, Professor. Great to have you with us.
Thanks, Tom.
Well, we may be hyperlooping and we may not, but now we know something about it. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Hi, I'm Ron Suskind.
And I'm Heather Cox Richardson.
We're the hosts of Freak Out and Carry On, a new politics and history podcast from WBUR.
Hey, thanks for sticking around for this preview from our show. If you like what you hear, you can subscribe to Freak Out and Carry On wherever you get your podcasts.
Take a listen to this excerpt. Let's welcome our guest, Nick Ameli, director of the Shorenstein Center on Media, Politics, and Public Policy at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government, author of The End of Big, How the Internet Makes David the New Goliath. Welcome, Nico.
It's great to be here.
So, Nico, there's a widely accepted narrative that the media enabled Trump during his rise, during his campaign and his victory. But also, haven't they been enabling him during those first 100 days? Tell me what the evidence shows as to how Trump has been signing up the media as his handmaiden.
So we've done five studies, all of 2015, 2016, and the first 100 days of Trump, looking at media coverage, mainstream major media coverage of Trump, everything from Fox News, Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Washington Post, USA Today, et cetera. The truth is the media during the campaign overwhelmingly gave Trump positive coverage. Mm. However, one of the reasons for that is that a lot of the stories were driven by polling. And the story was always that Trump was rising in the polls.
The new CNN ORC polls very much about Donald Trump's huge lead as the choice of Republicans for the presidential nomination.
Despite all kind of conventional wisdom to the contrary, he was winning, and it won in the primaries. And so that favors Trump in a really overwhelmingly dramatic way.
However, how about the first 100 days?
In the first 100 days, the coverage is overwhelmingly negative. However, most of the time in the first 100 days, the only person that the media quotes on Trump is Trump. I think it's 6% of the time they quote a Democrat, 4% of the time a congressional Republican, almost no policy experts. The stories about Trump, quote Trump. And so it's a very weird dynamic in that sense. It is overwhelmingly negative, but it's also all Trump all the time.
It's a reality show. They're going to the star.
Compared to the last three presidents, he dominates news coverage. So much more of the nightly newscast is about Trump than in the first 100 days than any prior president. It's really astonishing, almost to the exclusion of all other news.
I mean, he's
like, I'm talking about sports news and weather news. Like, he crushes it.
Well, you know, here's the thing. Is somebody mentioned sports news. I'll just mention this. Is that years ago, an ABC producer, I just thought for Ted Koppel, said, why do people watch sports on television? I said, well, I don't know. It's neatly lined. They're winners and losers. No. It's the only thing that occurs on television. It actually happens. Everything else is produced. Trump occurs on television. You can't take your eyes off of him.
In the 2 years of the presidential campaign, it doesn't matter which candidate or which issue. Pick any candidate, and Trump is quoted 2 to 3 times more in an article about that candidate than the candidate themselves.
Good God.
Trump is quoted more on Ted Cruz than Ted Cruz is. Trump is quoted more on Hillary Clinton than Hillary Clinton.
He had the best lines. Lying Ted, crooked Hillary, low energy Jeb. I mean, you know, you can't not credit a kind of twisted genius in managing that. He hung that around their neck in bully fashion. That's your name now.
I think a crucial question for the media is how they will cover the presidential campaign in 2020. Will they do anything differently?
Well, the problem is if you are either covering Trump or covering the resistance to Trump, he is still defining the narrative.
That's right.